Welcome back to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. I'm Father Sam Sawyer, sitting in for Carrie Weber, along with Father Matt Malone. And we're here talking with America's Los Angeles correspondent, Father Jim McDermott, about the assisted suicide law that recently went into effect in California and the church's response there. We invite you to join the conversation, giving us a call at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. Again, that's 1-888-322-8465. So please give us a call and let us know what you think about this recent assisted suicide law. So, Father McDermott, if we can go back to you, how's the church forged partnerships in resisting this law? Who else is the church working with in kind of drumming up, helping to hold up the conversation of the other side of this law?
Sure. Certainly they've been working with disability groups. They've worked with a number of, the name's going to slip my mind at the moment, but a number of, you know, major sort of advocacy groups that are national, that are sort of the...
I think one's called Not Dead Yet.
Oh, now that one I'm not familiar with. That's a name I should remember, though. But there are a number of groups nationally that sort of are sort of the opposing view to compassion and choices. Compassion, I don't want to sort of overstate it, but they're sort of the group that's sort of been pushing this law throughout the country. And I got to interview them in the process of doing some stories on this a couple years ago. I mean, I think they're an organization that present themselves as having a pretty obvious concern, a concern that most Catholics would share, a concern about mercy and compassion. But I found them pretty slippery at times, and that their facts could easily get slipped around to sort of fit their argument in a way that I think should concern very well any well-intentioned person that thinks that this law is something that should be passed.
And as you say, it's tough because you don't want the church to appear insensitive, right?
Absolutely
and,
not.
Unmerciful. In fact, you know, this is the theme of the decade for Catholic Christians, thanks to Pope Francis. We had one comment, we had several comments on our website about your piece on this, and one came from a woman named Crystal who said, really, this is all about people who are dying and in a lot of pain deciding for themselves to end the pain a little earlier, and I don't understand why the church would be against that. I mean, I'm sure Crystal's a perfectly reasonable person with a kind heart. I mean, how does the church respond to that?
No, I mean, I think ideally what the church says is, in a sense, begins by agreeing with her that we share the same concern. We all share the same concern of that people shouldn't suffer, that that compassion is at the heart of our faith. But it's about expanding the understanding of what a law like this means, at least in part. And it's about expanding maybe a sense of our own faith, although it's risky. I think that it makes sense in a way when the church makes arguments about, you know, the sort of meaningfulness that suffering can have in our faith.
Right.
But there, too, it's a very fine line between that being helpful and callous.
Right.
And I think as a church, our concern about the possible implications of a law like this for, say, the poor, for the disabled, for everyone, the urgency we feel can become a stridency that then seems incoherent mm-hmm. to people, where they begin to think the church doesn't get it. They're more worried about a law than about my suffering or my mother's suffering or my father's.
And how do we, it seems to me that it could easily become, a second a kind of follow-up question to that one would mm-hmm. could easily be like what people say about abortion, which is, well, I'm personally opposed to this, but, you know, why can't we let other people choose this? So might say, well, Jim, you know, you're a person of faith, you're a Catholic, so, you know, you may not want to die this way, but why stop me from doing it?
Right. And again, I think one argument anyway would be, because we don't understand ourselves as isolated individuals in a society, but as a society, and that of all people, this is sort of paradoxical, but our concern has to be for the least first. And the least definitely includes the very ill. It also includes the poor, the aged, the disabled, and the ways that a law like this can put pressure on them. I mean, it's there's no, it's not a simple answer as a result of that. And that's part of the, I think that's a part of the church's challenge and goal, is to help people understand this is more complicated than the fact that, and I think each of us have a story like this, someone in our family gets sick and we don't want them to suffer. Like, that's so essential. But this, a law involves a much broader spectrum of issues and relationships than that.
Well, and it does strike me that one of the challenges here is precisely which story you tell about this. You know, as you mentioned before the break, one of the ways that this whole campaign got moving was the focus on the story of Brittany Maynard, and putting a very clear and relatable and sympathetic face to the struggle of someone with a terminal illness who wanted very much to be able to end her own life on her own terms. And in the face of that, to just announce the moral principle comes across not only as not effective, but also, you know, just cold-hearted.
Sort of like, are you even listening to what you just heard?
Yeah. Like, you we weren't listening. You just waited for them to finish talking or something. And I wonder, in the face of that, have you seen any efforts either from various disability organizations or from the church in California to tell the story of the people who would be negatively affected by this law, of the people who would be put at risk when the law gives them this apparent freedom but no real support for their real needs of health care or pain management or hospice or something?
So I would say yes. I've certainly throughout California, and I would say in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles where I live, probably even more so, they're definitely, their communications in general, they've done a lot of really interesting things, and a lot of it focused on issues of life and sort of imagining life as the spectrum of life and all of the issues of life from conception all the way to infirmity and aging and death. The challenge is the sort of stories that you're suggesting often they're more like what could happen. They're the possibilities than they are the concretes. So one of the things I love about the Archdiocese of Los Angeles actually is that in a way while that's a very useful sort of rhetorical argument, they've more sort of focused on, let's tell stories of families. Let's tell stories of children growing up and of children in poverty and their needs. And their approach has been incredibly positive, very, very positive. Pretty much, I think, since Archbishop Gomez, and maybe Cardinal Mahoney was the same, but certainly since Archbishop Gomez came in, that's sort of the direction that he's taken.
And is that really true throughout the communications operations of the Archdiocese? I know they're well known for being innovative.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think when the Archbishop, I don't know if it was immediately after he became Archbishop or soon thereafter, he joined the Pontifical Council for Communications. Mm-hmm. And I think he's taken that role very, very seriously. So he hired a very talented guy from sort of the Hollywood and corporate world to do social media, who then brought on a team of 10 people that is responsible for all kinds of social media and website development and communications for the Archdiocese. And their approach, they're very collaborative with the different parts of the Archdiocese, and it's always very eye-catching and hopeful and positive. Bishop Barron is now the auxiliary in Santa Barbara.
Barron.
Yes, yep. And he himself is obviously incredibly talented at communications and sort of adds a whole nother wing to sort of the way that they can talk about issues and the sort of forces or techniques they can bring to bear. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Archbishop Gomez is very mild-mannered and yet I'd say very innovative. The kind of people that he's gathered around him are doing things that I don't think you'll find in many other places in the church in a very positive, hopeful sort of way.
Well, I would say that, I mean, from where I sit, that seems to be the way to enter into this conversation, whether it's about assisted suicide or abortion or whatever the issue is. It's from, you know, let's try to personalize this conversation, right? And this is something that Pope Francis keeps calling us to, see the person, that the subject of all of our questions is, you know, not some philosophical concept, not some theological idea, but a person, right, created in the image and likeness of God. And let's tell each other our stories. Because in the end, you know, we were talking a little bit about this before the break. When you talk about it at a kind of propositional or philosophical level, you realize very quickly we don't share the same premises. So I don't know how we're going to have an argument. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. But what we do share is an experience of being human. Right.
Absolutely. And the sort of, speaking back to Sam's point, sort of the stories. We all have stories of our life that sort of ground us and give us meaning. And in whether we, whatever our opinions are on certain issues, as we share those stories, we gain, I think, a kind of understanding and respect and connection with each other that sort of goes beyond some of the arguments that we have. We end up being able to not only persuade, but sort of, I don't know, connect or create community in a way just through the sharing of those kinds of stories.
Are you seeing this this approach to communications, especially in Los Angeles, having an effect on the ground level? You know, do you have, how are people responding to it when you talk to them, you know, out in the parishes or when you run into people?
Yeah, I think, again, I think that the kind of approach that they're taking is having a pretty positive impact. They just sort of rebooted their, the Tidings was their sort of weekly archdiocesan newspaper, and they've sort of rebooted it as a magazine slash sort of web presence. And I don't, that's all very new, so I'm not sure yet what kind of the reaction has been. But again, it's sort of, it's more of the same of a very positive, sort of exciting, innovative, hopeful approach. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it seems that the thing that would be that, I don't know, it seems kind of obvious to me, but if we're not able to tell a story, and we're not able to tell our stories and hear one another, then truth very quickly just becomes a weapon that we beat each other over the head with,
yeah.
Right? And of course, this is something that you know a lot about because you are a storyteller.
I'm working on it.
Yeah. Right? You're actually a working writer in Hollywood. This is speaking of rare events.
Right, it's like it's an eclipse or something. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I wonder, you know, because our listeners probably don't know, but you are a Jesuit priest, but you also work as a writer in entertainment and television. And, you know, how do you make that connection between your own vocation and storytelling and your faith and meeting people where they are?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. I went to Los Angeles in 2010 to do a screenwriting degree, and then I've worked for the last 3 years pitching ideas, selling ideas, and for the last year, for the last calendar year, on a television show called Preacher as one of the writers on staff. And it's interesting, and when you're working on a staff, you're really sort of, it's like working for an editor. You're there kind of listening for what they want and trying to provide material. When you sell an idea, it's more your own voice and working with a network to kind of bring it to light. And I would say, it's a lot about, for me, it's a lot about trying to pay attention to what are the truths of my life and what are the real meaningful sort of relationships of my life? Because usually there is that's where God's working. And that's where the sort of fruit can come out in stories that might not even look the same, but the heart is the same, if that makes sense. So it's about a lot in Hollywood, I find, you can write a crazy story or a fun story, but it doesn't have any truth at the heart of it. And
right.
it's because it's not really relevant to the person writing it.
Right.
Like they never got to the hard questions or experiences of their own life. So that's kind of where I'm working anyway, is trying to make my own writing, like I'm working on a script about a pilot about a parish, trying to make it like, what have I observed as a priest? What have I observed of the experiences of people living in a parish or their own sort of faith questions, and really making it true to that.
So now, you're kind of an exotic commodity, right?
like a wildebeest or something.
Right, right. So, I mean, because I would imagine, like in Hollywood, you know, that, we all know the stereotypes about Hollywood, you know, being very liberal, very progressive, very open. And they kind of look like, so what are you doing here? And right. And when you try to have a conversation with them about, say, you know, the assisted suicide bill or something
sure.
like that, you know, how does that play out?
It's interesting. So when I went in to this work, I very much assumed it would be difficult, that there'd be a lot of assumptions that that basically I wouldn't be open-minded, or that I would be very critical of certain sort of things that society holds up as sort of the golden rule at this point. But I've found myself incredibly well accepted. People like a priest because it's something different, because there isn't another right. Dozen of us so far anyway doing this kind of work. So they're intrigued by your point of view. And actually, I've been amazed at how excited people are at times to sort of like try to get a story that I'm interested in produced, because it is something different, and they sort of see that it has a different set of values that might speak to people than other things that they've seen.
We have a caller. Marco, you are on America This Week.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome.
Oh, hi, good morning. It's a pleasure to be talking to you. You're going to have to forgive my English, as I'm calling from Mexico.
Okay.
The only opinion that I have, the opinion that I have about this is I'm just basically, I was trying to read through the documents of the Second Vatican Council, and I found that in the portion of the Constitution about the Church in the actual world, and this is obviously 50 plus years ago, and on one of the, it is very clear on one of the chapters of with respect to human being, it is very clear that it is against God's will to to attempt against life, and he's basically the author of life. And as I was telling him in my introduction, he giveth, he taketh away. So I don't think it's his will that anybody would attempt to take it, and I think it's his will to if he gives life, he is the only one of us to take it. So that's why I would be against this.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Marco. Father Jim, pretty straightforward commitment of the faith, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Archbishop Gomez in Los Angeles, when the law became enacted in June, he said something very similar, that something about don't say killing is an act of life or is an act of mercy. Like, it's completely inconsistent. So, yeah. But, of course, Marco, I definitely appreciate your point of view, and We always want to remember that as we're suffering, that God is probably suffering with us, right? And holding us close in the struggles that either we personally or other family members or friends are going through, and the sort of grief and sort of torment that sometimes is a part of our lives.
Also amazing to think that, 50 years ago when the Second Vatican Council was going on, and that passage that Marco quoted for us, that would have been a position that the Church held that pretty much everyone else accepted as part of the obvious received wisdom.
Yeah. Right.
And now it's a position that has to be argued for and made understandable, and we have to find new ways to communicate even that timeless truth, because we can't just rely on people agreeing with it as obvious.
Yeah, right. I think that's a great insight. I think that is the real challenge on this issue, and I think a range of others for the Church, is to find the new way. Some points back to some of the things you guys have been saying already about finding the stories, finding the, just the ways of communicating that speak to where people are at today.
Well, Father Jim McDermott is America's Los Angeles correspondent, and he's a former associate editor of America, and a Jesuit and working writer in Hollywood, which is probably his most impressive credential. And as always, Jim, it was really great to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. Real pleasure.
And you can read Father Jim's reporting on this at americamagazine.org. When we come back after the break, we're going to have a conversation about the legacy of Elie Wiesel. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.